Welcome to Nicosia. Uncut. Hello, Andromahi.
Hello, Kemal.
Andromahi, I have been asked about the new episode, and I told people who asked that we are about to record it. And I think people are very much interested in the upcoming elections, Cyprus politics, what's going on, and our perspectives, of course.
Yeah, I think it's been a while, but we have been very busy. Loads of things have happened, and obviously we couldn't let the elections in the north go without an episode, a more bespoke episode, of course. So, Kemal, what is the vibe and how are things about the upcoming elections for the Turkish Cypriot leader on the 19th of October?
Well, just a reminder to all of our listeners, the Turkish Cypriot system, political system, is a parliamentary one. So constitutionally, the president, the Turkish Cypriot leader, has only limited powers, just like in Greece. But historically and politically, the Turkish Cypriot leader is entitled to run the Cyprus problem talks. So it's very crucial, it's very important. Currently, we have 8 candidates, and apart from the main two, the 6, they are expected to get 1 or 2% altogether combined. Now, the main contenders in the Turkish Cypriot community are Mr. Ersin Tatar, the current Turkish Cypriot leader, and Mr. Tufan Erhürman, the leader of the opposition. Mr. Tatar has been supporting a two-state solution, is very close to the Turkish government, very close to Mr. Erdogan, very right-wing, very populist when it comes to Turkish and Turkish Cypriot relations. And basically, his understanding of the Cyprus problem is very superficial, if you ask me. No depth is involved. He just wants to be with Turkey, and then whatever Mr. Erdogan says is correct. And, you know, his understanding of the Cyprus history is very basic and one-sided. And he is supported with the current Turkish Cypriot coalition, a three-party right-wing coalition. And although it is not going well either, so his position in the Cyprus talks has always been very conservative, very one-sided. And then he left this tradition that the Turkish Cypriots want a federal solution as a solution to the Cyprus problem. Now, you might be very critical of post-1974 that Mr. Denktaş was talking about federation, but in fact he was interested in reality a very loose confederation, that might be argued. But at least in theory, the Turkish Cypriots have never left the idea that they really want a federal solution to the Cyprus problem. And that was the first breakaway from this happened after Crans-Montana, when Turkey openly started talking about that we don't have to be bound with a single option, we should be able to have all options on the table. And this is when Mr. Akıncı stepped in and said that this is not realistic. When he lost the elections in 2020 to Mr. Tatar, then Turkey and Turkish Cypriot positions are fully aligned. And we don't have so many options on the table anymore. We only have one single option, and this is a two-state solution. Now, Mr. Tufan Erhürman is an academician. He studied law in Turkey, spent many years in Turkey. He is a respected professor. He is very well established in the Turkish Cypriot community. He is recognized. He is respected. Even his opponents respect him. His argumentation is always very strong. It is very difficult to challenge him in any kind of a discussion, because he always thinks what he's going to say before he even starts the discussion. He's very rational, very logical, and his thinking is always connected to each other like a chain. So it's very difficult to break it apart. And of course, he's the leader of the left-wing CHP party, Republican Turkish Party. And historically, CHP is the biggest pro-federal solution political party. And currently, according to the polls, the opposition leader, Mr. Erhurman, is leading with a few points difference. We don't have many healthy polls, if you ask me. The basic fault lines within the Turkish Cypriot community in these elections can be summarized as follows. As it is an election about the Cyprus problem directly, it's about two-state solution versus a federal solution. And of course, thinking about the change in demographics in the Turkish Cypriot community in the last, 50 years, then it's about Cypriots and people who moved to Cyprus and started to live in Cyprus after 1974. You might call them as settlers, as the Greek Cypriot community would say, but there are those who've been living here for 50 years. You know, they have the fourth generation, and then the definition of settler is even weak these days. And then, of course, there is this famous left and right. And then there is this, if you ask me, not a bit artificial, if you are pro-Turkey or you anti-Turkey, or pro-Erdogan or anti-Erdogan. So these are the main fault lines. And of course, the Turkish Cypriots are also disturbed by the fact that Turkey and Turkish governments have historically interfered somehow in the Turkish Cypriot elections, but this the level of intervention, and it's getting more and more, and then this is something that Turkish Cypriots are not happy with, and they just wanted to make sure that they want to have their own autonomy in their own internal matters. And of course, there are other issues, like, for example, Turkish Cypriots are somehow more secular than Turks in Turkey. Again, these are generalizations, of course. They are more, they turned their face towards West. They want to have a Western lifestyle. They want to be part of the European Union. And these are some of the aspects that are also on the table.
What would you say? It feels like Erhurman's campaign is in stark contrast to Akinci's approach 5 years earlier. I think back, and I don't know if it's indicative of the times, but I think Akinci back then had given a fight about identity, Turkish Cypriot identity, Turkish Cypriot autonomy, which is not the case in these elections, right? I mean, Erhurman is clearly following a different strategy. Of course, well, for us, it was so unfortunate that Akinci's strategy back then had not worked out. So it seems like Erhurman's team is now following a different approach.
Any election is all about strategies and how you convey your message, right? So I think in the times we are living in, there are multiple things that any contender needs to take into account. It's not only about hard politics, it's also how you are being regarded by the voters and how you convey yourself to the voters. Clearly, Mr. Erhurman is not Mustafa Akıncı. The train has left, the bird has flown away, we lost the chance of having Mr. Akıncı as the Turkish Cypriot leader in a possible solution. Even those times I remember those circles in the Greek Cypriot community criticizing him for being pro, being connected to Turkey. He has a hidden agenda, this and that. Now, Mr. Tufan Erhurman is a different product. He is a product of a different generation. And also we need to understand that a lot has changed since 2015 and 2020 and 2017, the Crans-Montana talks. And we cannot expect Mr. Erhurman to behave, to act the way Mr. Akıncı behaved. Now, Mr. Akıncı in the last elections, his strategy is to polarize the voters. He was expecting a very sharp difference. He wants to convey the voters exactly what are his positions. He never hesitated at all to take a position on matters. on the issue of Cyprus problem, on how he regards the relations between the Turkish Cypriots and Turkey. He even said that I don't even expect those people who are supporting Turkish positions to vote for me. So a very sharp, very polarized a campaign. It almost worked, by the way. It almost worked. But a lot has changed since 2020. The demographics have even further changed. And the reliance of the Turkish Cypriots to Turkey has even increased. And when there is no light at the end of the tunnel, then the hope for a solution for an autonomous Turkish Cypriot polity would, you know, has also eroded. Now, I think what Mr. Erhurman is trying to do is to do exactly opposite of what Mr. Akıncı has been trying. On the issues of the fault lines, he is always trying to show himself as a reasonable, unpolarized person that would accept anyone's opinion, that would not exclude anyone, but involve anyone. And that's actually his campaign slogan. He says, "We are going to run this all together," meaning that he's not going to exclude the people who are not on the same line with him. And it is presented as a very democratic line. What his opponents are trying to do, they are trying to pull him into the trenches, into dangerous waters. They want to show him as anti-Erdogan. They want to show him as anti-Turkish, anti-Turkey. They want to show him as a strong left. They want to, you know, show him even a very staunch federal solution supporter. And he's trying his best to tone down this. Now, our listeners would ask, I mean, why is it wrong to clarify your position? It's because we are not living in normal times. It's because we are not living in a normal country. It's because our waters base is not normal. And it's because that at a time when the Turkish Cypriots are feeling that they are more reliant on Turkey, they don't want to anger the waters, they don't want to anger Turkey. They remember what happened in 2020. It was such a big trauma. And I think it's the reasonable thing to do. And so this is why in the Greek Cypriot media and in the Greek Cypriot mindset, they are trying to portray Mr. Erhurman as a soft, as a light version of Mr. Tatar. What Erhurman is trying to do, on the other hand, is to show himself as the man of reason, a respected Turkish Cypriot leader. Even if you would disagree with him, he would be somebody who would be respected in the Greek Cypriot community, but also mainly in Turkey. This is one of the weak points of Mr. Tatar. With all his shenanigans about, you know, like, it is one thing to be a pleasant person who can make jokes, who can, you know, show yourself as a man of people. It is something else to come up with a portrait that may be in line with our times, the strange times that we are living in. Like, many people find him a little bit naive when it comes to, you know, in leadership. I mean, the way he's connected to Turkey, the way he's getting excited like a primary school student reading a nationalistic poem, it makes him look a bit, let's say, not very serious. And this is what Tufan Erhurman is promising to the water. You say, he says, look, you might be believing in a two-state solution. You might be liking even Mr. Erdogan, but you would prefer a Turkish Cypriot leader who would be respected, who would be taken seriously, who would think seriously on the matters. One last thing, Mr. Erhurman is not a two-state solution supporter. In fact, what he's been trying to do from the very beginning is to show everyone that this so-called two-state solution is actually a misnomer. because he's been challenging Mr. Ersin Tatar on what grounds his policy is based on. He's trying to deconstruct the notion, the understanding that a two-state solution will be in line with the interests of Turkish Cypriots or Turkey. And he's trying to show that the federal solution is the only way. But he doesn't do it with slogans. He does it through deconstructing the narrative of the baseless position that the two-state solution is in the interest to the interests of the Turkish Cypriots and Turkey. And also, he is also acknowledging the distrust the Turkish Cypriots feel towards Christodoulidis.
Well, if we are to touch a bit on the Greek Cypriot sort of approach to these elections, I think it's a constant in the Greek Cypriot community not to have a good grasp of what happens in the Turkish Cypriot community. And it's always a constant to have this, what I often call the self-fulfilling prophecy, which is that the Turkish Cypriot leader is always the puppet of Turkey. I remember a few years after Klamontana, this academic who now works in the UK, he wrote this book, Grigoris Ioannou, he wrote this book that was titled Dektash in the South. And the premise of that book was how slowly Dektash's mentality about partition, about having Greek Cypriots on one side and Turkish Cypriots on the other side, was beginning to become stronger in the Greek Cypriot community. And I remember I was speaking to that. I was invited to speak in the presentation of that book. And I remember...
I was there.
Yes. And I remember before Akinci lost the second time. I mean, Akinci was still in power back then. And I remember me saying that it is like the Greek Cypriot leadership is waiting for yet another Dektash to arrive at the Turkish Cypriot leadership in order to be able to excuse all its positioning, basically. If we are to be honest, Tatar is a very, very good alibi for anyone who doesn't want to solve the Cyprus problem. I cannot encourage anyone to, we are pro-solution people. What can we say to a leader who has to face someone like Tatar, who has moved the goalpost so much and he keeps insisting on a two-state solution? Obviously, you cannot push anyone towards that direction. So having said that, it is once again startling to see that having lost the best Turkish Cypriot leader that anyone could have hoped for, I mean, Mustafa Akinci, from the leadership of the Turkish Cypriot community, and having had Mr. Tatar for these 5 years, a rational reading in the Greek Cypriot community would have been, yes, Erhuman is different. Yes, he is not Akinci, but we cannot get Akinci back, and let's discuss why we lost Akinci, if we are to be honest. But you need to be in a position to acknowledge a rational and an objective sort of analysis, should be in a position to explain this to the Greek Cypriot public. Having said that, this is not the case. On the contrary, the narrative that is kind of disseminated constantly now is, well, doesn't really make a difference. It doesn't make a difference if it's Tatar. It doesn't make a difference if it's a human. But from this, you're totally missing the picture on two fronts. On the one hand, it has to do with the actual issue of the Cyprus problem. I mean, how can you claim that it doesn't make a difference when you have Ersin Tatar speaking of a two-state solution, and then on the other hand, you have someone who speaks of the agreed framework. Yes, he wants the process to be different. Yes, he wants things to be done differently. Yes, he wants things to be done with a sense of urgency. All these are things that the UN has also said in the past, obviously without setting any preconditions per se, but it has been said that the process needs to be to follow an understanding of a sense of urgency. So, it makes you wonder how anyone can be presenting this to people as the same. And it makes you wonder how the Greek Cypriots, after so many years, still wait for a Turkish Cypriot leader who will say 100% what they believe of the conflict, as though this is ever possible. And that's a problem in this narrative.
I need to clarify. I feel like making a clarification on a couple of issues that have been reflected in the Greek Cypriot community. In his election campaign, Mr. Erhurman said that Paphos is also ours, Limassol is also ours. And some people wanted to read it like an expansionist policy of Turkey. In fact, what he's trying to say is that he is feeling connected to the rest of the island. Of course, he didn't come out and say that, you know, Kyrenia also belongs to the Greek Cypriots and this and that, because he knows very well that those will be manipulated and will be used against himself. The second issue is about the so-called four conditions. I don't see them as preconditions. I see them as the pillars that he want to establish the next round of negotiations on, but also some kind of a tool to get Turkey on board. Because Turkey has been clearly saying that no more federal solution after 2017, clearly, the Turkish establishment is really pissed off. Whether they are correct or wrong, whether they're entitled or wrong, it's another discussion. But we clearly know that the solution of the Cyprus problem needs to be through the UN process. And then, from Ankara's perspective, they were played, they were tricked by the Greek Cypriots, one in 2004 and once in 2017. And they felt like, no more, you're a small country, who do you think you are? You cannot play with us anymore, go do whatever you want. From now on, two-state solution. Now, when this is constantly being voiced, of course, Tufan Erhurman needs a leverage to show himself that he's not naive to start the talks for the sake of starting the talks, to fall in the same trap again. And this is why he said, first of all, it needs to be, our equality should be accepted from day one of the talks. And I don't see any problem in this. I mean, the UN resolutions, the 2014 document, they all talk about equality. The second issue is about the fact that it should be result-oriented, meaning that there should be some time frames. Now, this is not accepted by the Greek Cypriots. We all understand that. But the United Nations also acknowledge the fact that, we cannot continue this forever. The other issue is that everybody should acknowledge and accept the convergences from day one. Who in the right mind would be opposing that? In fact, even Hristodoulidis have been saying that it should start from where it's left off in Crans-Montana. It's another way of saying it. And the last one, which is more controversial, he says, look, if the process collapses again, and if everybody understands that it's not because of us, we should not be going back to where we started. We should not be the prisoner of status quo. We want something in the end. I think this is a way of saying Turkey, look, I am going to start the negotiations, and then if it fails again, we are going to get something in hand. And then when he's asked, what is this something, if it is recognition of TRNC, he again acknowledges that as long as we have the Security Council resolutions, this is not going to be possible. But he's talking about the direct trade regulation of the EU, which had been promised to the Turkish Cypriots anyway, which has been waiting in the shelves of the EU. He's talking about direct flights, this and that. So I think his conditions is trying to convince Turkey, convince everyone, and convince, and I think he's also convinced that these are needed to, to mean business. And they should not be presented as a precondition after 50 years. Like, what time frames are we talking about after 50 years? We are on the brink of permanent partition if we are not there yet. Now, the other thing that many Greek Cypriot friends that I have, they hear a lot a small number of people in the Turkish Cypriot community who are very close to Şener Levent line, who accuse Mr. Erhürman as being pro-Ankara, who say that, you know, oh, Erhürman is another puppet of Turkey, and they tend to believe those people. And they don't understand how the dynamics in the Turkish Cypriot community have changed, how the realities on the ground have changed, the role of Turkey that we are, that's, you know, in this game. And I don't really understand how it is possible to solve the Cyprus problem without getting Turkey on board. It is the Greek Cypriots have been saying for many years, it's not the Turkish Cypriot, it's the Turkey. And, you know, then you should get Turkey on board. We need a leader, a Turkish Cypriot leader, who can convince Turkey, who can talk to Turkey, who can be acknowledged and you know, respected at least by Turkey. And this is what Mr. Erhürman is trying to do. He's no way a puppet of anyone. He's not a puppet of his own party even. Within his party, some people even, you know, complain that it is very difficult to drag him here and there because he is always opinionated. He has his own reasons. He reads a lot. He reads literature. He reads poetry. He reads politics. He follows the world. So it is not a political party, you know, people would drag him here and there. So at the end of the day, what we need to ask ourselves, what is going to happen in the Greek Cypriot community, in the Greek Cypriot leadership, if and when Tufan Erhürman is elected? Andromahi, do you think that the Greek Cypriot politics is ready for Mr. Erhürman?
No. I think we are not ready. And I think there is kind of, we are sleepwalking in the Greek Cypriot community. We mumble Cyprop, but we are just sleepwalking into disaster without having a clear understanding of how and what and when. I am particularly amazed at the fact that you see everything that's going on around you. You see Turkey coming closer to the US once again. You see everything changing. And yet in Cyprus, honestly, it's like we are sedated. That's kind of mind-blowing when you note it. To be honest, I don't think that the political parties or the government are ready for a new momentum in the Cyprus problem. On the contrary, and I have to say that there is, despite all the constant talk by Mr. Christodoulidis that we have mentioned many times here about that he says about the status quo not being sustainable, etc., there is no substantial understanding of this. It's all talk. And it's all talk at a time when nationalism is becoming much more entrenched and much more enhanced. We see the normalization of more nationalist symbols and everything. So I have to say that I am not particularly hopeful about the reaction of the Greek Cypriot community. At the same time, as I said before, this whole mentality that Tatar and Erhürman are the same is not allowing for a proper discussion to start in the community. But also at the same time, in all honesty, to some extent, I feel like the government might be thinking that regardless of what might happen, they can spin it. I mean, you are talking about the government that was part, to some extent, I mean, the president, he was part of it. When they left from Crans-Montana, a high-level conference that to the eyes of many, I mean, its failure was on the shoulders of Mr. Anastasiadis, to the eyes of many, again. So, I mean, I have a feeling that they feel that if they could do that, why not spin it yet again? And in all honesty, I am concerned that they might be right. Having said that, though, there are particular things on the ground that make this different. And they make this case and this point in time different, because I really think that we have no time yet. And if we don't care about the Greek Cypriots, let's look at the Turkish Cypriots and let's look, for instance, what might happen if Tatar becomes elected. Or let's consider what might happen if Erdogan becomes elected, but if the Greek Cypriot side doesn't engage in a constructive way. Because let's be very clear. The vast majority of the political system today is referring to a return to where we were left back in Grand Montana. But when we left from Grand Montana, nobody was saying to return to Grand Montana. On the contrary, the people who were saying that, it was us, the activists, back then in the streets. And we were targeted and we were presented as traitors. Conveniently so, so many years later, and when the return to Grand Montana is no longer on the table, if we are to be honest, the whole political system in the Greek Cypriot community, not the whole, but the majority of it, now feel comfortable to be referring to a return to Grand Montana. So what happens if Mr. Erdogan gets elected? And what happens if he presents concrete dilemmas to the Greek Cypriot community? These dilemmas could be what you discussed and what you described before. But obviously, it will be tied to this agreement on the agreed framework, which is what the Greek Cypriot community is now claiming to be supporting. So what will happen if the Republic of Cyprus government will be faced by a Turkish Cypriot leader who is indeed willing to move things forward based on the agreed framework, but of course, based on the understandings and the changes in the status quo as well throughout the years? So that's the big question. At the same time, and of course, a cynic would tell you, well, they're going to demonize the process as they are used to. But even if we accept that, again, there are concrete things on the ground that shouldn't allow us to be feeling, or, you know, to be laid back and to be saying, okay, let them demonize it, because you have Turkey enhancing its control in the north. You have Turkey's attempt to kind of taking over the cultural and domination of the north. You have the Turkish Cypriot will being kind of limited to a significant extent. So if Erdogan gets elected and he can make nothing out of it, then Turkey's dominance in the north will be the new reality. And as we've said many times before, when they are over with the Turkish Cypriot, then the pressure will start mounting on the Greek Cypriots. So in any case, it's a lose-lose situation for the Greek Cypriots if they don't engage and if they fail to seize the opportunity in the case that Erdogan gets elected. Because in the case that Tatar gets elected, then I don't think
things will be very, very, very difficult for everyone. But let's talk about the positive scenario and the dates. So the election will take place on the 19th of October. And we have the Cyprus presidency of the EU starting also in 2026. And we know that after Mr. Tatar, Mr. Erdogan will be a fresh breath of air. And I think the fact that he says that even if we are not ready to start the negotiations on day one, I want to start talking to the Greek Cypriot leaders on multiple issues, including confidence-building measures and the crossings and, you know, things that affect daily lives. And probably the international community and the United Nations particularly will be delighted to have him, you know, getting engaged with them. And of course, the European Union as well. You could imagine how the Commission will be excited, how they would want to cooperate with him. The member states, many member states who would be dreading to see another 5 years of Mr. Tatar would be very happy to work with him on their projects, on the, you know, Germans on their Imagine project. So it will be a moment of excitement in the international community. And not only Mr. Erdogan, probably his team would also be the people who would be willing to talk to them, to get engaged with them. And that will be reflected as a pressure, if I may, on Mr. Christodoulidis, who was enjoying the space left by Mr. Tatar. And we also know that we have the Greek Cypriot parliamentary elections in 2026, And we know that he is more reliant on the right-wing votes, on the votes of Elam. So how do you see, number one, the international community getting engaged with Mr. Christodoulidis? He will try to, you know, not let him maneuver as much as he used to do in the past. And how do you see the, you know, AKEL-NDC particularly, and of course we know that now, according to the polls, Elam is rising, these two parties positioning themselves and the pro-solution circles in the Greek Cypriot community responding to that?
I have a hat on my head as a co-president of a political party in the Republic of Cyprus. But I do think, I mean, I think Volt is the most pro-solution party and the most genuine about the process.
I agree with you on that.
And it is, in fact, the only party that says to the Greek Cypriots and the Turkish Cypriots, look, guys, now is the time to try to salvage what we can salvage. Things are not ideal. Things were much better back in 2017, but we need to be pragmatists and we need to see what is our end goal. Do we want a united country? Do we want a single sovereignty, single citizenship, single international representation? Then this is what we should hope to get. Appreciating that 7 years after Kramontana, things on the ground are not the same. So if you do that, you cannot have as your narrative, oh, let's go back and start from where we were left off. You need to start from an understanding of where we are. And of course, with the agreed framework, but you need to have as a clear end goal what it is that you want. And it's the three singles that matter at the moment, because this is what is now being challenged. So Volt is a party that comes forward and says we need to take advantage of all the discussion about the European army and about everything that's going on at that level. And we should put Cyprus as a part of the solution in this and come forward and be very outspoken in saying, yes, Turkey should be part of Europe's architecture, say a security architecture, as long as we can solve the Cyprus problem based on the agreed framework and retaining the three singles that is the most important thing that we have to salvage now. So we are coming in with this constructive approach because we need to be in a position to be leading the international situation as well. So that's, as we said, I think we put Volt there and it is the clearest of parties. Then you have AKEL, and I'm going to come to AKEL first because I think AKEL, if we are to be kind of, again, fair, I think it's another party that could support the process. I'm not sure they could support it in this discussion that is now taking place about the European architecture, security architecture, because of their own issues. But when it comes to discussing the Cyprus problem solution on the ground, I think it is fair to say towards them that we would expect them to support a process. Of course, in the past, when things were put down to a referendum, AKEL didn't prove to be that reliable. But if we are to say about starting a process, I think we would expect AKEL to be kind of helpful. About DC now, things are more difficult there. I think in DC, you have a leadership that is not consciously in support of a solution and of the agreed framework. You have the narrative, okay? You have they will say yes, we support the bi-zonal, bi-communal federation. They will say that, but in all their actions, they are acting, as a lighter lamb. And this right-wing turn that DC is taking should be of concern to everyone, because basically you have DC losing all the pro-solution voices. The majority of them are not even going to run. I mean, you have one very, very strong pro-solution voice in DC has been Xenia Constantinou, for instance, and she's not even going to run because this line of thinking has been sidelined within the Democratic rally. And not only has it been sidelined, but the leader of the Democratic rally, Anita Dimitriou, seems too weak in her understanding of the Cyprus problem, and she cannot go aside from slogans. It's hearing DC talk about the Cyprus problem is like you just read speeches that you've heard hundreds of times before without substance. And even this proclaimed so-called support towards a bizonal bicommunal federation is not seen in action. And that is to the detriment of anyone who believes in a solution, because you would want a strong democratic rally who would be in a position to support the process. But I have to say that I don't believe that the current DC leadership can support consciously a road towards a solution. And I would be very, very concerned about that. And I am also very concerned that the way Elam can kind of shape the narrative on a number of issues and the others follow, it's a very, very concerning trait of our current political setting, to be honest. And after this, chaos. Complete and utter chaos.
The international community, though. The international players. And we have criticized the international community, the UN, especially on the issue of Palestine, Israel. And yeah, I mean, if we start this, I think it will take another program. You know, how, you know, what's going on the ground in front of our eyes, and how things are, you know, unacceptable that, you know, we came to that stage again after the Second World War. But how do you see the role of the international community, the United Nations, pressuring Christodoulidis and trying to put him on track, and then in fact that might eventually facilitate some excitement within the pro-solution circles in the Greek Cypriot community?
The United what? And this comes from someone who really believes that the only international institution that has salvaged itself throughout everything we've been seeing the past few years is the United Nations, because they are trying to remain true to their mission. They are trying to reiterate what they stand for. But sadly, we live in an era in which basically international organizations have been severely sidelined. And that's another very problematic trait in the way the narrative goes in the Greek Cypriot community. So you have an era. You look around you, and what do you see? You see the complete collapse of international order. You see the complete collapse of international law, international order, and anything that we knew about humanitarian and international law. In this setting, you have some powerful countries that are trying to kind of impose their course of action. You have Russia in Ukraine, and then you have Israel in Palestine and what it is doing there with the full support of the biggest country in the world, which is the United States. So you have a setting in which international law is being constantly sidelined, and you have the rule of the powerful. We basically, it's like we are reverting back to a jungle, to the rules of the jungle, where you have no law and you just have the power of the most dominant animal. What happens here? I know you might find it astonishing, but it is true. For some reason, the Greek Cypriot narrative sees itself in the powerful ones. And for some reason, Greek Cypriots think that by siding themselves with Israel and the US, they are siding themselves with the powerful ones, and this will be to the Greek Cypriots' merit or advantage. In this discussion, we completely overlook where Turkey is. We completely overlook the relationship between Turkey and the US. Like, honestly, 2 days ago, you had the US President Donald Trump coming out and thanking Turkey for being among the countries and the powers that were part of this so-called peace plan that he and Netanyahu have presented now about Gaza. So, I mean, for some reason, Greek Cypriots are yet again, because we've done it in the past, Kemal, and we saw what happened on the island, Greek Cypriots are yet again living in their fallacy of grandeur. And they feel that we are becoming stronger because we are becoming the backyard of Israel, basically, because we do whatever we are told. And there is this mentality. There are people out there who will argue with you that Israel will intervene and liberate Cyprus. They will argue with you that Israel will oppose Turkey militarily for the benefit of Cyprus. This is the narrative that is now going around in the country, and it is a very problematic narrative because it is dangerous, and it doesn't. It basically, it's such a completely problematic reading of the situation. Small countries like Cyprus have only international law to count on, because if the rule of the jungle prevails, then we will be the prey. We will be the weak animal. We will be the weak link. But this is completely overlooked in the Greek Cypriot narrative. We are completely overlooking the fact that only if we solve our problem will Cyprus be in a position to shape an external foreign policy that will be powerful and dynamic, and that will be really kind of constructive, because otherwise we are simply kind of making ourselves vulnerable to other international powers that might want to take advantage of the unsolved problem. And this is what we currently see. So that's, I am particularly concerned of the way we read the things. And in fact, we have to say that the president himself, he came out and he said, sadly, it's the rule of the jungle, and we are trying to side ourselves with the powerful in this setting. And one wonders, who is the powerful in our conflict? The second most powerful power in NATO or Cyprus, regardless of how close we come to Israel or to the US, because we saw what happened with Qatar as well. I mean, Qatar was attacked by Israel. You know, there was an attack by Israel in Qatar, despite the fact that Qatar is such a close ally of the US. I mean, these things fluctuate all the time. Nobody can be safe in a setting in which the Cyprus problem is not solved. And this is not the message that is being passed by Christodoulidis. And so I wait to see what and how will happen.
Great analysis. It's just I want to stick on the optimistic narrative. I really cannot take another pessimistic narrative these days. If and when Mr. Erdogan is elected, we might be expecting to see a positive response from the Commission, from Brussels, from the European circles. I think that's for sure. We'll see United Nations getting excited. Madame Olguin will be very excited. Finally, a breakthrough, a possible breakthrough, and a success story. We don't know how Trump administration will be positioning itself. Will they be willing to engage? We know that, you know, they might find themselves engaged in strange areas, and suddenly we might find ourselves that American administration is also, although despite, you know, there is this amazing relationship between the American administration, U.S. administration, and the Christodoulidis government, this might work against Mr. Christodoulidis if your best ally and your most powerful ally is now interested suddenly to solve the problem in a way that will be acceptable to Turkey and Turkish Cypriots. And even the idea of a solution that is acceptable to Turkey frightens many Greek Cypriots. I mean, they want a solution, but they don't want this solution to be liked by Turkey. So we might be finding ourselves in a situation where diplomatically Christodoulidis will be bullied even by many. And we know that generally Greek Cypriots respond negatively when they are being bullied, for sure. But I wonder if this international positioning will be creating an environment where Christodoulidis will need to find allies. I don't see him trying to challenge the big powers. He's not a player that will want to challenge the big powers openly, as you rightly said. And I'm not sure if Netanyahu government, Israel, will be interested to see a solution on this part of the world. That's another discussion. I'm not sure if Russia is interested to see a solution on this part of the world. But I think we will be seeing, as the, you know, as a European Union member, Cyprus and also Greece. I think Mr. Yarapidis, I think the government in Greece will be interested to see a solution, at least a process going well. And I don't know how prepared Mr. Christodoulou is to this process. And this might be a good thing or a bad thing. So we are yet to see. I think we are almost coming to the end of 1 hour.
I just looked and it's like, it says 53 minutes and I'm like, oh.
Well, things have piled up, but rightly, because we are busy with multiple things. A negative scenario, Andromache, will be very bad for Cyprus. If Mr. Tatar is elected for another 5 years, it would mean the end of Turkish Cypriot polity as an agency in the Turkish Cypriot politics. It will be probably, we'll be seeing solidification of green line into a hard border, and especially with the engagement of Republic of Cyprus with the Schengen Treaty, it will be even more difficult. We won't be able to see another crossing point. We will be probably be seeing more legal action against those who are engaged in the Turkish Cypriot economy. We'll be seeing repercussions, reactions by the administration in the Turkish Cypriot side. So it doesn't look very promising if Mr. Tatar will be elected for another 5 years. We are still not out of gray zone, even if Mr. Erhirman is elected, but we will have some chance. I think ending this podcast, we need to also remind someone who is very precious, someone who contributed a lot to the reconciliation between the Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots. I also have each and every pro-solution activist has a memory with her. So I would like to remember Ms. Katy Kleridis, who passed away very recently, and it is such a sad development for all of us. Would you like to say a few words?
Yes, I think that any person who has ever been in touch with the pro-solution movement is mourning about the death of Katy. She was one of the people who kind of paved the way for all of us to follow. She was a very brave voice, and she was a constant force talking about the need for peace and reconciliation on the island. She was one of the more liberal voices within the Democratic Rally. She was the only person from within DC who criticized publicly Anastasiadis about leaving Gramontana. She expressed her profound disappointment at the way that DC and Anastasiadis were acting after Gramontana. And she was a woman who she turned into action everything that she believed in and everything that she advocated for. And I think that, especially today, that this dream about a united Cyprus and about this vision of coexistence and peace and healing our wounds is becoming so difficult to even conceive it. Losing people like Katy Kleridis, with her standing as well, is making us all reflect. And I would like just to put a small asterisk on the hypocrisy of some people who, when she was alive, they were not only sidelining her, but really speaking very badly about her because she was expressing what she felt and what she believed, majority of them from within her party. I think that it's kind of weird to be seeing them pretending to mourn today. Having said that, I think, and I want to stress this, that the overwhelming response from pro-solution people, Greek Cypriots, Turkish Cypriots, and you see our Facebook feeds are full of people speaking Greek and Turkish mourning for this woman who has been lost and who had spent her life advocating for a solution and even until the very end. So homage to Kedi, and we will keep walking on the roads that she paved, and we will try to keep resilient in the face of adversity.
I want to end this episode with a personal memory of me with Kedi Kleridis. Before Crossings started in 2003, the only way for the Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots to meet was to get permissions for meetings or events in Little Palace organized by the United Nations. And I remember United Nations used to organize UN days where Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots were allowed to go and participate in Little Palace. At those times, we were not allowed to cross, there were no crossings, but we were allowed to go to Little Palace. But from Little Palace onwards, you could actually walk to the Greek Cypriot side. And I remember in one of those days, we were also, it was late 90s, we were in a United Nations event, and our friends, our Greek Cypriot university student friends at that time, were organizing an event in University of Cyprus, a bicommunal event with not a single Turkish Cypriot because it wasn't possible to cross. And they told us, you know, it would be very meaningful for us if you come to our event. It was a cultural event. After you finish your event in Little Palace. And of course, we were told very clearly that our permission allows us to stay in Little Palace and go back. We shouldn't be moving forward. We shouldn't be crossing even further. And at one point, I told my university student friends, I said, you know, let's respect our Greek Cypriot friends who are organizing something at the university. Let's go and at least be present. And we shouldn't know our administration to know. You know, it's a small risk that we should be taking, but, you know, we should be with them. They invited us. We are talking about late 90s. And then we, a couple of us, were brave enough to disobey the instruction given to us. We walked to the Greek Cypriot crossing checkpoint. And the police was like panicked, rightly so. I mean, because you would expect the Turkish Cypriots not to cross, especially after a certain time. And then they started asking us questions, and people started asking what's going on. The Turkish Cypriots want to cross. What happened? And they started calling people, and we got frightened because this was supposed to be, we were supposed to sneak in. And then we decided to walk back and not to give a headache because the police, the Greek Cypriot police, was trying to understand what was going on. Suddenly, out of blue, somebody thunderbolting, like, and it was Kedi Kleridis. I think at that time she was an MP. She literally break through the crowd, rushed to the police and started shouting at them in Greek. I understand that the police was trying to do the right thing, and then she wasn't disrespectful to that, but she couldn't tolerate the idea that some Turkish Cypriots wanted to cross and they were not allowed to cross. And then she literally made a big fuss. I mean, she's such a nice, kind lady. You should see her trying to tell us, let those Turkish Cypriots go to their Greek Cypriot friends. And then, yes, we did. We eventually went and everything. And that was the first time I remember, I know who she was, I remember her being herself, being a true Cypriot, and then putting her heart into something that she believed in. So I think with this, with some positive notes, we are, I think, closing the program.
Thank you. And oh my, in 2 weeks, let us see in what mood we will be discussing.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks, open, diverse, free.